It's straight up at 8 o'clock, and again, Mornings with Ed on a Wednesday, and that means Laureen Gilbert, the president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial, is in for the Wealthwise moment. And, you know, timing is everything.
Good morning.
Good morning, Laureen. How are you today?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no. Thank you for being here. The timing could not be better, as there are so many things happening. Let me get to the biggest deadline first, which is December 26th. The pandemic's jobless program ends, rent protections expire, deferred student loan programs end. And yesterday, it would seem that Mitch McConnell shot down a $908 billion relief package, citing he doesn't think he can get the president to sign that. Are we really looking at January until we can get something going?
Potentially, but, this year end, nobody wants to see it come to that, to where we have all these programs expiring and there's no backstop for people. And I think, you heard Senator Collins yesterday also saying, people are hurting. We need this to happen. So I think she's a good bellwether because she's, very moderate right. Republican. So I think at the end of the day, both sides know it needs to happen. They're just sticking points on how much and what's actually going to get funded and what can they get passed. Specifically, too, we have there's a restaurant relief bill that's probably going to go nowhere because it really needs to be part of the overall stimulus package. So it's picking out some of these smaller bills that have been submitted and bringing it together into a larger bill that they think can pass. But, this consumer spending has been strong in the middle of all this and leading into Christmas spending, and you saw some of the numbers from Black Friday, which were spectacular. And so I've been saying along, people will spend the money while they have it, even though there's the fear that they may not have it for those who are receiving unemployment, et cetera. So I think everybody knows it needs to happen. I'm still hoping for December. To your point, it may actually be January, but I think it will be before the inauguration.
Okay.
That's my best estimate.
Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed with that one. When I read this a couple of days ago, I thought the first person I can't wait to talk to Laureen about this. NASDAQ's diversity push for corporate America. They want to give companies that list on its high profile exchange an ultimatum. Now you either diversify your boards or get out. Tell us about that.
Right. So it's a proposal that's been made by the NASDAQ, submitted to the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, saying that they want an aggressive, progressive measure, which is to have mandates for the boards. Now, we know in California, we already have those. So it passed back in 2018, first of all, to have a woman added, female added, and with a timeline over time, adding more women, depending upon the size of the board. And then Governor Newsom, this year in September, end of September, passed additional legislation, kind of adding to that measure, which included minorities and other categories. So it's been done in California. Now NASDAQ's trying to do the same thing. The question is, should that be a mandate? And mandates, I would expect in the next administration, we're going to hear a lot about mandates. Mandates for masks, mandates for corporations. Here's another mandate. The question is, should it be? And look, I'm one who would benefit from that mandate, and yet I'm personally not in favor of mandates.
Right.
In my viewpoint, it takes us back to affirmative action. Do we really want that type of thing? And in fact, the voters in California, right, we said no to that. So I would say at the end of the day, I don't think we need a mandate. What do we need, though? We need incentives. We need incentives for companies to do the right thing. So the question is, do you make it punitive or do you make it incentive? I'm more in favor of an incentive where you give corporations maybe some kind of tax break for going ahead and making those hard choices. The other thing I'd say, Ed, is that proposal was a one-year timeline. 1 year is not enough time to completely change your board of directors. Board of directors have a culture. Just like companies have a culture, your board of directors have a culture. You got to work through those issues of interviewing people, getting the right people on board. So I think the timeline also needs to be longer.
So you mentioned the term culture, and I'll go with you there. So it isn't sometimes the culture of a company or the culture of business that you do exclude certain people. So you do need to be mandate, whether or not you actually have incentives and you choose to take advantage of those incentives over hiring an all-white old man board, you make those choices. So I think the culture of business, doesn't it require sometimes mandating things like this?
You know what it needs? It needs the right leaders. It needs the right CEOs, the right chairwoman or chairman of the board to make those good decisions. And I'll use LPL as an example. LPL is who we clear securities through. Right. And LPL has been ahead of the game. Multiple women on the board,
right.
and minorities, and really speaking to that. And it all has to do with the leadership. The other thing I'll mention is that when it comes to diversity, there's much more to diversity than just, saying minority. There's diversity as far as skill sets. What boards need to be focusing on is who can they bring on that has skills in technology, for instance. You'd be surprised how many boards have no one on their team, no one on their board that's really an experienced technology person. The focus in the past has always been on finance, which, of course, is an important role, very important role of the board. All the board members are fiduciaries. Right. You've got to know what you're doing when it comes to finance. But other areas are as important to the business, so you can have different kinds of diversity on a board.
Right. So moving forward into the future, you hit it on the head. Technology is going to be the biggest asset that you have that you can take into a boardroom or an office setting. Let's talk about tech for a second. The biggest tech companies have so far strengthened their hold on the global economy during this pandemic the last 9 months. Now, it seems that they're leveraging this moment with the moves at Airbnb and DoorDash. Tell us about those moves.
Well, so you're talking about some IPOs that are coming out, right. And there's such a strong appetite for these kinds of companies that bodes very well for these companies that are coming out this year. And there's a scramble right now to see how many more they can get, IPO'd, because right now is the time. The market is doing well. The economy has stabilized. So I would expect those to have the same great debuts as some of the others have. I would say there are also risks in the area of technology. Just today, the president tweeted out that he will not sign a defense bill without Section 230 being terminated. So immunity to technology firms. So there's still this wrangling about Section 230, which is a very important aspect that everybody should be concerned about, because they should not be immune. Right. This needs to be addressed.
Okay. All right. Good point. And Tesla, and while we're on tech, I want to stay with Tesla. First of all, two questions kind of boiled into one. This boom that we see and this willingness for investors to be confident, is it the arrival of a safe and effective vaccine that's given them this confidence? And Tesla also going public, right?
Well, Tesla's been public.
No, I'm sorry.
Are you talking about an?
I'm sorry. They were. I read the wrong question to you. They were one of the best performers, having risen nearly 600% through yesterday. But in an email to employees, Elon Musk has said that their actual profit margin is fairly low. What was that all about?
Well, let me tell you the good news about Tesla that you may not have heard about. China, which is very hard to break into, right, has opened the door to Tesla on their Model Y. They were already in China with the Model 3, right, And usually when a company comes in a big way into China, China wants to take ownership, a stake in the company. They didn't do that. Not only did they not do that, they imposed no additional taxes on Tesla. In China, the Chinese buy 26 million vehicles per year with a burgeoning middle class. So that is a huge inroad for Tesla in China. That's going to continue to help them drive. So even with the low profitability that you mentioned,
right,
they've got to have the volume. And that's what Tesla has against everyone else. The other thing that they have is the battery that no one else has.
Right.
You know, they've been able to figure out the battery issue, which is the key to an electric car. They are light years ahead everybody else. Now, you know, hey, having said that, I just ordered the electric Porsche, and I've owned two Teslas.
Right.
And the Tesla is amazing, but they're going to have competition. But even with the competition that they're going to have, Tesla is so far ahead that, you know, I think it's going to be hard for anybody else to catch up. And that's why it's exciting. And the way that it's trading is trading as a technology company, not as an automobile company.
Okay.
Because really everything they have is geared towards technology. So we're actually bullish on the fact that Tesla's being added to the S&P 500. There's going to be $100 billion of trading going on to get that stock put in to the S&P 500, which is happening on December 18th. In other words, it's going to be, all the trading is going to be done then before it officially comes on board on the 21st, December 21st, onto the S&P 500. So with that, we're expecting a lot more volatility in the S&P 500 around Tesla entering in. It makes up, so it's going to be 1% of the S&P 500, and Tesla tends to be a volatile stock.
Okay.
So people should be aware the S&P 500 might become more volatile.
Okay. All right. And that's where, I had scribbled my question, and that's where they were going into. And I apologize for the confusion at the beginning of that question.
Thank you for clearing that up. Yeah, they're going into S&P 500. And the question is, now, Ed, who's going to be removed from the S&P 500? Every time you have a new entry,
right,
you've got to have somebody that comes off. My best guess on that is Tiffany.
Ooh.
And the reason I say that is because LMVH bought Tiffany's, you know, and even though they had problems with their deal, it is going through. It's going through on a reduced version. They came to terms on that deal, and which means that Tiffany's would no longer trade on our U.S. exchange. So in a sense, they have to come off. And they're also a consumer discretionary company, like Tesla is considered to be. So with that, we'll see. They have not announced who is going to be removed yet, but I'm thinking it might be Tiffany's.
Okay. And you are a soothsayer where that goes, so I do have confidence in what you're saying. Speaking of soothsayers, and I'm going to pat myself on the back here for a minute, a while back, when the deal was finalized with Nikola and GM, I asked you the question, how long do you think before it falls apart and they start suing each other? And look what happened.
And you were so right. You were so right. And now they've got a pared down deal,
right,
with no equity stake for GM. And so it really has fallen apart.
Right.
And it goes back to the CEO making exaggerated claims about where they really were. And as a result, you know, the shares of Nikola have been dropping.
Right.
So that's a perfect example. And the other one that I just mentioned before about Tiffany's and LMVH is that, you know, the deal's not done until the deal's done. And there's, you know, in that period of time where a deal has been announced but hasn't been finalized, there's this arbitrage between the two stocks. And usually the one that's being acquired starts to go up. The one that's acquiring tends to go down until they make the deal. But now what you're seeing, like I said, with Nikola, is that the shares are falling because the deal is not what it was. And then same with Tiffany's and LMVH. They had snags in their deal. The deal was dropped for a while, and then they re-engaged and came to terms. So you never know until it's all said and done whether it's going to go through.
Okay. I'd like to ask you a question about an idea that I had, but first I want to ask you about some year-end strategies that we could be looking at.
Yeah, this is the time of year, Ed, when we're talking to clients about different year-end strategies. And one year-end strategy that we're talking about right now is the Charitable Lead Trust. So yesterday was Giving Tuesday. Everybody was thinking about giving and what they could do to give to their favorite nonprofits. Well, the Charitable Lead Trust is a way to put a lump sum of money in and get a tax deduction all in one year, this year, let's say, and yet string out those contributions to charities over a period of years. So you're front-loading your deduction. You get the big deduction in one year. You're streaming out those donations to the charity in the future, and basically ensuring yourself that you have the money in the future while getting the tax deduction today. It's a great strategy this year in particular. With interest rates being as low as they are, that means the deduction is the highest I've ever seen for this kind of strategy. So anybody interested in a year-end strategy that involves a nice tax deduction, the Charitable Lead Trust is something to consider.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. And here's the idea that I had. Are you ready for it? Do you have 2 minutes to okay. You can when I told you this earlier, when I prefaced this earlier, I said you are so fiscally responsible. I know how you are, and you're going to think I'm crazy with this idea because it's too expensive, it'll add to the debt all. But here's the idea.
Okay.
So, in order for us to develop decent immunity as a collective from the vaccine, it's going to take about 75% of Americans to get the vaccine, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yet, there are only 58% of Americans currently willing to get the vaccine. So,
correct.
We need to bridge that gap. And of course, as we've been talking about for months, the economy is directly tied to how sick we are, okay? So, how do we bridge that gap? My theory is this, is that in February, we do a series of three stimulus checks. In February, everybody, no matter what, gets some portion of $1,200 like we did last time with the stimulus in February. Then toward the end of spring, the same group, you know, everyone gets $600, okay, as another stimulus. And there's a third stimulus at the end of summer, about the time that we figure that most Americans could be vaccinated by. So at the end of summer, only those that have been vaccinated get a final $1,200 stimulus. What do you think of that? Now you're going to, as soon as you hang up the phone, I know you're going to start figuring this out on your calculator, and you're going to come out, you're going to say, no, you're crazy. But that's certainly a way to bridge the gap.
Yeah. So first of all, it goes back to what we were talking about with the NASDAQ. I like positive incentives versus punitive measures.
Right.
So in that regard, I like the concept. I think that it is too expensive. The other thing is, don't forget, not everybody got those checks. I didn't get a check. You know, there's a lot of people that didn't get checks. It was based on income.
Right.
So if you made too much money, you didn't get a check. So you've got a problem there, because many of the people that may not want to take it might be in that category,
right,
that they never got checks anyway. So another idea along the lines of what you're saying, which is an incentive, would be a tax credit incentive. Not deduction, but a credit, which is a dollar for dollar against what you owe in taxes, with proof that you have had your vaccination.
I like that.
You know, and then for those people that get it, and it's across the board, you know, everybody gets the same amount, whatever that is, right. And, you know, $100, $200, whatever that number is, and they get a credit against it. And I like that much better than the concept of a mandate of making everybody get a vaccine. I think that's very problematic.
Right. Agreed.
May not be, you know, constitutional. We don't know. I like the idea of a positive incentive. So I think we're running along the same thoughts. It's just, how do you do it and how much is it?
Right. I knew if I brought this to you that we could solve the world's problems. I knew I could.
There you go. Once again.
Laureen, if some of our listeners want to take advantage of the year-end strategies that you've got, that you're looking at, how do they get in touch with you?
Give us a call at 949-748-1177, or you can look at us on the internet and reach us that way at wealthwisefinancial.com.
She's the president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial. This has been the Wealthwise Moment. Laureen, we look so forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Bye.